Sweating, Brudenoy sat on the rock floor amid the strewn pieces of the pump. For the life of him, he could not see what had gone wrong with it. Yet the pump had stopped working, threatening the farm's carrot crop with slow withering death. Brudenoy had wanted to fix the pump before the agrotechs realized it had malfunctioned. Now, instead of becoming a hero, he felt like a dunce.
Lev?
A voice rang off the farm's rock walls.
Lev, are you in here?
He scrambled to his feet. Two of the biologists were standing uncertainly at the airlock several rows away. They started toward him.
I thought you were leaving today, Brudenoy said as they approached.
Flight's canceled. Solar flare coming up, said Sarai Nakuma.
Oh.
So we thought we'd take you out to dinner, Debbie Payne added.
Nakuma was tall, leggy, lean as a ballet dancer, her skin a glistening deep black. Payne was blonde and petite, yet with an hourglass figure that strained her coveralls. Brudenoy had fantasized about the two of them ever since they had first arrived at Moonbase, even after he realized that they preferred each other to men.
I can't leave here until this wretched pump is fixed, Brudenoy said. Spreading his arms, he added, You see before you a true peasant, chained to his land.
The women ignored his heartfelt self-pity.
What's wrong with the pump? Payne asked.
Shrugging, Brudenoy replied,
It won't work.
Let's take a look at it, said Nakuma, dropping to her knees to examine the scattered pieces.
I've taken it apart completely. Nothing seems wrong, yet it refuses to do its job.
Engineers, hell, Payne said, grinning. Everything checks, but nothing works.
In the old days, we would have it shut, Brudenoy grumbled.
And then you'd have no pump at all, Nakuma said from her kneeling position.
Payne ran a finger along the hose that carried the water and nutrients.
Is the pump getting electricity okay?
There's nothing wrong with the electrical power, Brudenoy said.
Plucking at the wire that ran along the hose, Payne said,
Except that the insulation on this wire is frayed, and the bare aluminum is touching the metal pipe fitting here.
Nakuma popped to her feet.
It's shorting out.
Peering at the slightly scorched metal fitting, Brudenoy said,
I don't think the wire we make here at the base is as good as the copper stuff they make Earthside.
Didn't you smell the insulation burning? Payne asked.
Brudenoy scratched his thatch of graying hair.
Now that you mention it, there was a strange smell a while ago. I changed my coveralls the next day and the smell went away.
Both women guffawed. In short order, Brudenoy produced a new length of wire. Payne spliced it into the line while Nakuma reassembled the pump with hands that were little short of magical. Brudenoy watched them admiringly. Once they were finished, he insisted,
Now I will take you to dinner. It's all on me. My treat.
They laughed together as they left the farm. Meals at the galley were free, part of the corporation's services for Moonbase's employees. Brudenoy laughed the hardest. Hardly anyone in the base knew that these two young women were lovers. All the men will choke on their food when they see me with these young lovelies on my arms. Some of the women will, too. Not bad for an old man, he thought.
Welcome to Moonbase, said Ginny Anson.
Greg Masterson's nose wrinkled at the strange smell of the place. Human sweat mixed with machine oil, and a strange, sharp, burnt odor, as if someone had been firing a gun recently. But he made himself smile and took Anson's proffered hand.
Thanks. It's good to get here ahead of the flare.
Anson had gone down to the receiving area, dug into the floor of Alphonsus, adjacent to the rocket port. A little more than a rough-hewn cavern beneath the crater's floor, the place was called the Pit by veteran lunatics. It was connected to the main section of the base by a single tunnel, nearly 2 kilometers long. There were plans to put in an electrified trolley line along the tunnel. For now, a stripped-down tractor did the job, its finish dulled and dented from years of work on the surface. She kept a hand on his arm as Greg hip-hopped, like any newcomer to the moon, until he was safely seated in the tractor.
I brought you a present, she said, climbing into the driver's seat next to him.
A present?
Reaching behind the seat, Anson pulled out a worn-looking pair of boots.
Moon shoes. They've got weights built into them so you won't go bouncing around when you try to walk. Remove one weight per day while you're here, and inside of 5 days you'll be walking like a native.
It was a standard line among the lunatics. So far, there were no natives of the moon. Women got pregnant occasionally. They were gently but firmly transferred back Earthside as soon as their condition was discovered. I was surprised to see a working elevator, Greg said as he took off his slippers and pulled on the weighted boots. The tractor was programmed to run the straight tunnel without human guidance. Anson hit the starter button, and its aged superconducting electric motor whined to life.
We just put it into operation last week, she said. Makes it much easier to load and unload cargo once you get the crates through the airlock.
Takes a lot of electrical power, though, Greg said as the tractor jolted to a start. Anson waved a hand in the air.
Electricity's cheap. The nanomachines chomp up the regolith and lay down solar cells. Our solar farms are constantly getting bigger.
I've seen the reports, Greg said, and the projections.
Good.
They were tooling along the tunnel now at nearly 20 miles per hour. The overhead lamps flicked past, throwing shadows across Greg's sculpted face like phases of a moon hurtling by.
He's really a handsome devil, Anson told herself. But there's something unsettling about him. The eyes? Something. He looks... She struggled to define what was bothering her.
At last she thought,
he looks as if he could be cruel.
Miyoko Homa felt that she should be standing at attention like a soldier. As it was, she had bowed deeply to the chief manager of Nippon One upon entering his cubicle, and then remained standing with her arms rigidly at her sides and her face as blank as she could make it. "The solar flare that you predicted has not come," said the head chief. He was old for Nippon One, in his 40s. His belly was beginning to round out, although his face was still taut and his eyes piercing.
"Sir, it will come," Miyoko said flatly. "It is only a question of time."
"How much time?" the chief demanded. "We have kept everyone inside. The work that must be done on the surface is suspended because of this flare that was supposed to erupt. It's been more than 12 hours now. 12 hours of lost work. How much longer must we wait?"
Miyoko took a small breath before answering. "I do not know, sir."
"But you are our astronomer. It is your job to know."
"Sir, no one can predict the eruption of a solar flare with such precision. The configuration of magnetic field lines that I saw when I first issued the warning was typical of an imminent flare, one that would burst out in 24 hours or less."
12 hours have gone by," said the chief. With a glance at the digital clock on his desk, he added, 12 hours and 18 minutes." Miyoko felt like a small mouse trembling between the paws of a very large cat.
"Sir, I can only report to you what my instruments show. Any other astronomer in the world would have reported exactly the same as I did. It is unfortunate that the sun is not cooperating with us."
The chief settled back in his chair and rubbed his stubbled chin. "The Americans are apparently not afraid of your flare. Our reconnaissance satellite shows them working very busily on their base."
"But they must know," Miyoko blurted.
"Or they know better."
Miyoko clamped her lips shut.
The chief stared hard at her. "It is a great problem. Do I send the surface crews back to work or not? It is most inefficient to have them sitting cooped up in here when they should be working on the surface. Yet..."
"Sir, may I make a suggestion?"
He nodded assent.
"When the flare actually erupts, there will be at least an hour before the heavy particle radiation begins to build up. If the surface crews are willing to accept the first burst of relatively light radiation, it should be possible to get them inside to safety before the truly dangerous radiation arrives."
Immediately the chief said, "Tell me about this first burst of relatively light radiation."
Miyoko could detect no trace of sarcasm in his words. She said, "When the flare erupts, it throws out a burst of high-frequency radiation, mostly ultraviolet and X-rays. This arrives in our vicinity within 8.3 minutes, since it travels at the speed of light."
"How serious is this radiation?"
"To a person already protected by a spacesuit, it is not dangerous. In Tokyo, the radiation from space averages about 0.4 rad per year. On the moon's surface, it is closer to 25 rads per year. The initial burst from a solar flare will increase this dose